Welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about music news and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 208. We have three albums that we're going to review. We've got Blue Bannisters by Lana Del Rey, because, you know, if you wanted more Lana, here's your opportunity for more. You got To Hell With It by Pink Pantheress, and you have LP by JPEG Mafia. But you have to read it like that.
Yeah, in all capital letters with an exclamation mark at the end. The exclamation mark is making a comeback. People use it a lot in emails just to not sound like dicks. But other than that, because of that, it's kind of like lost a little bit of meaning. JPEG Mafia is bringing that meaning back with the exclamation point. Your move, Chuck, Chuck, Chuck.
Oh, God. Pikachu face.
We've got a smattering of news. And speaking of surprise Pikachu face, we have No Chill Island 20. If that sounds like deja vu, that's because we did No Chill Island 19, like, not even like a month ago. It be one of those weeks. It truly be one of these weeks. So there's so much ridiculous wild news, a lot to break down. And we're going to do that after talking about some regular news that we often do. And even before that, we're going to talk about some singles. So,
yes, shall we jump into it. All right. So, first single, we have Prester John by Animal Collective. They're going to release an album soon. So they have a single leading up to their album release. I've enjoyed Animal Collective. I feel like we've had to have done one of their albums on here, I believe, at some point on the podcast.
Yeah, I remember loving, it may have come out last year or the year before. I don't want to say last year, but there was maybe Bridge to Quiet was the EP or one of the lead tracks on it. But it was a really good track from Animal Collective. That was the name of the EP. And that was like a 10-minute song that kind of capped out the EP. But Prester John continues that really good, like, kind of continuous jamming sort of aesthetic.
With a passion for a little giving.
Perfect, like, synthesis and blend of electronic sounds along with traditional instruments, and that kind of coming together in this wonderful, like, indie continuous piece.
Yes. I mean, yeah, they've been killing it for a long time, and I really enjoy the track, and I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with this album, because this is their first LP in 3 years, almost 4 years. So we'll definitely review it and keep you posted on that.
Yeah, Animal Collective have always been, like, on the edge of a lot of really major indie things. So, like, there's just been, like, maybe not necessarily, like, on the edge, but they've just been, like, a really good, like, staple of indie music. And so,
From, like, their first record of Meriwether Post Pavilion, like, there's a lot of tracks on there that really set the stage for what indie was going to sound like for the next decade, even.
Yeah. I really can't wait for that. And,
yep.
Yeah, moving on.
Moving on. Next single, we have Psalm 102 by Semler.
Psalm?
Psalm.
Psalm.
Psalm. No, Psalm.
Psalm. Okay. Oh, God.
I know it's a song, but I wanted to be fun.
God Almighty, don't ignore me. Hear my. Let this be recorded for generations.
This is a really interesting track. Similar has kind of blown up recently, as I think she got, like, number one on Apple Music's, like, Christian charts for a moment, which is very interesting because she's a very open and out lesbian woman. And a lot of her music has to do with that intersection of her, like, religious nature with that like, identity that she carries and she has. And it comes out musically in this EP that she recently released. in just this really amazing way. We picked Psalm 102 from it just because that's the first song off of it, and you can get kind of like a really good idea of the range.
Yes.
It starts off like really, really synthy, but like there's guitar in it. There's like, it builds really like lovely like track altogether that caps off a really good EP. The EP is called Late Bloomer, and there's another like six songs on it. And also shout out Semler, because her name is Grace Baldridge, and we used to work together at TYT, and you've probably also seen her maybe online on a bunch of other things from like Refinery.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
That. Yeah, she was on Pop Trigger. Shout out that with Brett Ehrlich, Brooke Thomas, a number of others. And
it's funny. That's what I was gonna ask, because she looked familiar, whatnot on her the EP cover.
Yeah.
I was wondering, where have I seen this before?
We've been giving some friendly shout-outs recently in new singles recently. And so definitely check out Grace's, like, yeah, her musical, like, work has just been building and building and building over the years. And I really like this entire project. And this is coming from someone who is very much not fall into any of the identity categories on this, especially not the religious category. I'm not a very religious person, but like this is done in a way and characterized in a way where it's not like hitting you over the head with anything that has to do with Christianity. And because of her identity intersecting with it, it's a really interesting sort of interplay and response to it that is like respectful, but of like both like the LGBTQ identity aspect of it, but also the Christian identity aspect of it. So I think it's really well done as a whole project, but Psalm 102 is the first song to get you in. And shout out Grace. You can follow her on Instagram at Grace Baldridge. Anyways, if you want to be shamelessly plugged on this podcast and the singles, especially if you have new music, email audioface at syndicate23.co. We are really checking that email address now. I will reiterate the singles rule. The same applies for submissions. We're only going to review one song if it's a single that is coming off of an upcoming project. If it's a standalone single, that's a different story. But if it's a couple singles you've got and it's going to be like a upcoming project soon, much like we don't want to participate in major artists like continuous release cycles anymore, we're going to try to keep the playing field level for everyone else as well. So that being said, continue to send us your submissions. Audioface at syndicate23.co for all of those things. For all the favorite music and all the stuff we really like listening to, check out our 2021 AF playlist. You can find the link in the podcast or video description. It's a whole smattering of our favorite songs and music from the year 2021. Please check out our bonus episodes. I think I might just, it's episode 156 bonus. I encourage people to actually take the action of going out into the archives and checking out that episode. You can get a kind of an idea of Kendrick Lamar and his musical history. We've got a really good sense that he's going to be dropping music sometime very soon, within the coming months, within the coming weeks even. So make sure you check out that episode 156 bonus. We've also done bonus episodes on Radiohead, Cara Bonito, Daft Punk. We really get into other artists' histories and things like that. Help grow Audioface, because Audioface is a growing. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Audioface Pod, and check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/audiofacepod. Rate us, interact with us, all those things make an actual difference in helping more people discover the show, and we really, really appreciate it. Power Report, we did a really good Power Report episode recently on kind of just the general news that's going on. As a panel episode with Sean and Bam of We Made a Podcast, and we were I love how on Skype, because of the blur thing, it blurred out your peace gesture as though it was an obscene gesture, and it kind of was, because like the reverse peace thing. That's just a fun vibe. Special for the two people who stick around for the plugs on YouTube, who like watch it on YouTube, you got a little fun treat there. Check out Power Report, youtube.com/Dan from the internet. And thank you, Peter, for mastering episodes of Power Report and Audioface to make them sound great. Thank you very much. Dead Music 666 on Insta, Dead Music Productions. And so we move on into the news.
This is this is a very Audioface story. Young Thug, with we reviewed his album last week. He had a track featuring Mac Miller called Day Before, but he was on The Breakfast Club's Dan's favorite TV show ever, talking about it. And apparently he recorded Day Before one day before Mac Miller passed away a few years ago in 2018. That's crazy. And he was saying, giving how the track is titled and stuff, it gave him a lot of thought of, wow, should I like even have this in, or like, what does it all mean? Like, is it a sign for that stuff? Like, there's a lot with it, but it's one of the things where, you know, obviously posthumous releases and stuff, like it's a lot of them, they like put up random recordings of artists and stuff, or they'll have other things then chop it up and then make it a release. But if you have one where they go and they actually record it together and it's done then, but then the artist passes away, then it's one thing of, okay, then I think it's a little bit better to release it than the other ways that a lot of posthumous music is released.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. Because I think I remember saying in our review that didn't sound totally right because it was a posthumous release, but like, it's truthfully, it was recorded the day before Mac Miller died. So like, it's
crazy, man.
I still don't feel right about the track, and it's less about the production thing. That's just like an ear thing I gotta look out for. Maybe there's like another mixing thing in the track, but like, it's the true subject matter of and I don't think Young Thug is celebrating Mac Miller's death in any way or like doing anything like that. No. It's a very somber moment. The song itself is like, has nothing to, I mean, Mac Miller didn't know. No one knew he was going to tragically die the next day. So, but like, the song itself is a kind of happy-go-lucky song, like typical trap and be, like getting girls kind of story. But like, it's a really... Given what happened, what we know happened with Mac Miller, it's an apparent overdose. Mm-hmm. And given how often that happens in the music industry very recently with a lot of artists that have come up in this generation, like Juice WRLD, etc. It's really somber that we haven't had more of a conversation surrounding taking better care of artists and making sure that like we're not super glorifying drugs and all these overdoses as much as people do and people are. I'm not asking Young Thug to be like the leader of that conversation, right? And that's not like any grab on Young Thug. Like my feeling on the record is my feeling of the song on the record. I can't really isolate any more than that. But when it comes to the analysis of it, I just feel like too often we celebrate Mac Miller. There's just a re-release of one of his recent one of his early mixtapes, not early mixtapes, but like a prominent mixtape of his that came out last week. Same time Young Thug's Punk came out, actually. And there's a lot of discourse about things going on in the music world, about things going on in the entertainment world in general. But I think there should be more of a discourse about like, hey, why do we continue to glorify all of this drug use when it
does so much damage.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's just an understatement. So much damage. It takes the lives of artists that are so promising and young that we continue celebrating, that people do, like, anytime a Mac Miller song is played at a concert, it's definitely going to be, like, one of the more somber songs because it's a whole generational feeling. It's a generational loss to Mac Miller. People are going to cry. People are going to be upset, and that's sort of, like, justified. It's, like, sad to take this life's gone away, but, like, what is the lesson from that? I'm not asking for Young Thug to, like, start running the D.A.R.E. program or anything, but, like, it's a conversation I would like to expand more in the music industry, but like we've had a lot in audio face. So that's kind of like a level that we've reached, right?
Yeah, I get that.
Right, moving on. Because we also do these sort of stories. Usually we try to pack them in like right after an artist has come out with that record, but the Young Thug stuff kind of came out the week after. So this is the Young Thug corner. We are moving on to that. This is an interesting turn in tone and everything else. Sean, take it away.
Yeah, so Young Thug is suing an apartment building for giving 200 unreleased songs to a stranger. So apparently at the concierge desk in his building, they handed out a bag of all of his gubbins to some random dude. And it had a shit ton of unreleased material and tracks. And he's like, yo, you can't do that.
The Louis Vuitton bag was worth $2,500, had $40,000 in cash, a diamond-encrusted watch worth $57,000, a diamond chain worth $37,000, Lil Uzi Vert's diamond skull thing that was worth I'm kidding.
I was going to say Lil Xan's fake Hublos.
More on that later.
Or Richard Mills.
Oh my God. Hublos.
More on that later.
But Young Thug, in addition to all of the stuff we did mention before that tangent right there, it also had the hard drive containing more than like at least 200 of unreleased songs from Young Thug,
yeah.
which Young Thug's legal team says are worth $1 million, which understatement might be, because considering where Young Thug's like where he is in the game right now, like I think that's kind of low. But I mean, also it's a bunch of unreleased songs. What we've been hearing from Trap is like, there's that thing about the Aubrey and the Three Migos tour when they went on tour in 2017, 2018 or whatever for Drake supporting whatever he was doing that year, mm-hmm. Migos supporting Culture 98, Culture 2, 3, 9, 2. Yes, it Eight? Was 2, the red one.
15?
And
Redbone
is 2. They mentioned, I promise this isn't a wild tangent, but they mentioned releasing, that stands out to me in mind, A, because the concert was named like a dumb tour name, but it stands out in mind because they said every tour night they made a new record, right? They made, like, recorded a new song. And we regarded at the time that like, oh, that just kind of shows like the way trap music is just sort of very recyclable.
Out,
you just pump it out very easily. And a lot of these songs probably never get made. And so, yeah, this could be 200 random Young Thug beats. Some of them might have been bangers. Some of them might have just been like random things and never see the light of day. So I guess that's like how the value is assessed there. But
yes.
That is a pretty major mix up for that hotel.
Oh.
That's a major mistake. Yeah,
you fucked up.
Yeah, if you work at that hotel and you were the person who gave the bag to the wrong Young Thug, or the wrong person in general,
good luck.
Good luck, but also like, yeah, I'm not gonna speculate. That's just fucking wild. Moving on.
Oh, first boy. Album review. We've got Blue Bannisters by Lana Del Rey. It is 15 songs, an hour and 1 minute. Long. Second album of the year of Lana Del Rey, not produced by Jack Antonoff. More on that later. This one, I am looking at people reviewing it and stuff, and obviously I listened to it first, and then I was interested to hear what other people were thinking of it. A lot of people like this a lot more than Chemtrails over the Country Club. I could see why. It's a definite more like pivot back to her older sound, like her like early 2010 style of Lana Del Rey, even a little bit of what was her album that came out a few years ago, Norman Fucking Rockwell, kind of more of that sound as well, slower down, really relying on her voice, more acoustic styles of production and stuff within it. And I think this is where, as much as I don't like Lana's music, I feel like it can get boring, and that's going to be like my big criticism. I feel like, but this is where she shines in within her own music, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I would largely agree with that. I, in this position on this podcast, there's a lot of times I'm listening and reviewing to music that after the podcast is recorded, I'm most likely not going to seek out and try to listen to more of, right? That being said, because of this position is like a sort of music critic, right? I can appreciate when an album just like sounds good. Yeah, even an album. I can appreciate when something has musical quality to it.
100%.
And this album, while I think especially the latter parts of it drag on too much, you get a lot of musical talent from Lana Del Rey. It's at certain points where like there's Lorde was another artist who has an entirely different background leading up to this, but released a very stripped down kind of back to basics, a lot of piano, slow singing, really letting the vocals shine, traditional singer-songwriter album. That one was produced by Jack Antonoff as well. More on that later. But I think in the idea of trying to do the slow song kind of thing here, where you're stripping it down back to basics but still doing like a pretty good thing, I like Blue Bannisters more than Solar Power.
100%, not even close, because this is where Lana Del Rey, like, this is where she makes her money, right? This is the slow down songs, a lot about in your feelings and saying some random shit that doesn't make sense, but you know, there's gonna be a lot of people that are like, oh my god, and bow down, and like, this is biblical and stuff.
Lana, please tell me more about your crypto boyfriend Kevin.
That's way too real. What's worse, Death Grips fans or Lana Del Rey fans?
Woo! Sean, that's a question. We need to title a video that separately because that's way too much of a conversation. I'm gonna write
that's just a lot of sauce, even though I love Death Grips, but goddamn, their fans are fucking wild.
Way too much sauce, dude. Go ahead and make your point. I'm not gonna answer that question. Let's assume it's rhetorical until we actually answer it.
It is. Because my thing is, because again, I looked at reviews because I was very interested because I actually genuinely thought this album was good. I think out of all the ones that we've reviewed on Audio Face, this is my favorite that she's produced and made. Because I didn't like No More Fucking Rock Girl that much. I thought it was really boring, and also I got upset because the stupid video of her doing the Sublime cover and saying LBC walking around in Venice, I can't forgive you for that ever. But then with Chemtrails Over the Country Club, I thought a lot of it was just really lackluster and didn't have a lot of emotion and feeling. And Lana Del Rey is known for emotion and feeling. That's her whole thing. And this catalog, you get all of that plus like a little bit more on the creative side of the song, like creative side of songwriting. It gets really long towards the end because every song is like over 4 minutes just about. And it can be a lot to listen to towards the end. Like if you cut it a few songs, like 3-4 songs earlier, then it's, you know, would be a lot better for a record. But anyways, a lot of the fans, they're just crazy. And, you know, they're like that. They like to say this is like the next coming of Christ or something whenever she releases something. But
before we get into the album, because this is also like an Audio Face criticism that, you're focusing a lot on the artist and the artist's like character and what they're doing, and that's coloring your review. And maybe that can bleed in sometimes as well. But Lana Del Rey in the lead up to this essentially deleted her social media, wasn't really engaging with that, was really focusing on the music. And you can get some subtle swipes here and there at like media criticism and things like that. But it doesn't too much, even for me, get in the way of the record, the musical production on its own way. And that's what I appreciate. And that's what I really like. I think that's an improvement in our own direction. Just like, it's not, I don't want to confuse that with a shut up and dribble. Like you're only a musician, focus on music. But there's a counterbalance. So sometimes you're being way too preachy. Remember that you're a musician, or like you're being way too preachy
from her art.
Exactly. This is not the case here in Blue Banisters, though. But I did want to get that out of the way here because the rest of this review is going to be all very much into the music because that's what Lana Del Rey gave us. And I think that's a credit to her.
Exactly. So going in, because that was kind of a Lana Del Rey, but I think we needed to say that in general. Just because we does this. Starts off pretty slow with Textbook, and when I heard that opening track, I go, okay, this is going to be a Lana Del Rey record, because I already heard like the Arcadia, I think that was the single off of it. I'm like, okay, now that track makes sense just by listening to the opening like minute of Textbook. I go, okay, now I see what we're going to get into. And I thought it was a pretty good opening track. Like the first few things, like Textbook, Blue Banisters, Arcadia, I think actually are pretty three decent opening tracks for her.
Give me children, take away my pain and paint my banisters blue, my banisters blue. There's a hole that's in my heart, all my women try and heal. They're doing a good job convincing me that it's not real. It's here.
It gets you into it, like you'll get the feeling of it. You can kind of get into your mind of like picturing where you are when you listen to it, which I really like in albums when they do that. It's very cohesive, even like throughout the whole record, you still get that. I really like the track, after the interlude of Black Bathing Suit. I like that one because it kind of picks up a little bit where like the first couple of tracks are slower. That one kind of builds and builds. It reminds me of Summertime Sadness style of Lana Del Rey, but early 2010s. But it's not necessarily a throwback to that sound. It's still like trying to do a little bit on the nose, a little bit stuff that's a little bit different, but it's still good.
Cause no one does it better. Switch to sweet magazines. Promise you it's not hard. Cause of you they don't mean it's my afterthoughts. And what I never said.
Yeah, I think Black Bathing Suit's almost like the lead single off of the record.
We did Arcadia, I believe, correct?
Yeah, we might have. I mean, it depends on how you want to do it. I think as the record has come out, Black Bathing Suit's kind of like popped off a little bit, at least with Lana fans. But I mean, just stream wise, like there's later in the album, Wildflower. Title track Blue Banisters, I agree with you, is also fairly solid as well. But yeah, I think the Lana really shines here in the first half of this record, maybe songs 1 through 9, where you're really getting a good idea of this version, this concept of where Lana Del Rey is pairing herself back and deciding that, okay, this is going to be the focus of the record. This is the sound I'm going to go for. It's something that's going to be a little more soft, a little more intimate, something that has... I think that highlights her vocals more as a singer, as a vocalist, because when she's sort of trying to emulate other personas or people, I think that kind of rubs off the wrong way because it doesn't seem genuine. But this seems very genuine, as you were saying, Sean, earlier.
Exactly, yeah. Because that's my, like, a complaint I have of Lana is that where I can feel like a lot of stuff doesn't feel genuine or like the production can lack, but this doesn't do that. It really delivers on that and kind of shuts up some of our criticism of her last record. But I think a lot of that has to do with Jack Antonoff's production, where you have like two records that come out pretty close. You have Solar Power and Kim Trails of the Country Club, and they're both very lackluster indies ones where like we've heard that time and time again. Like you get that a lot in the indie scene and stuff. Not necessarily a bad thing, but when you have two amazing singer-songwriters with Lorde and Lana Del Rey, like you have so much there that you can do, and then you end up making them sound pretty similar, which is insane because they are very, very different artists. Now you could see when he gets off of that, when you have different ideas, a little couple different people working with you, you could get a decent record from her. So,
That being said, after song 9, I think that the like welcome is overworn, as it were, and so like it starts to kind of get kind of repetitive. I literally felt like on both of my listens, I felt that Wildflower, Wildfire, and Nectar of the Gods just sort of like blurred into one another, not in the way of like, oh, the songs work well next to each other and they transition nicely. It's just sort of like, at that point in the album, I feel as though it needs some direction, some extra sort of wind, a second breath of fresh air some way, because otherwise it just starts to sound very bland and drawn out and done, like repeatedly.
What sweet world is this, honey, on the vine? School kid dreams came true, then passed in the night.
Oh, for sure.
Because of that, like, the rest of the record, to me, it lands. Like, it doesn't necessarily ruin it, but it takes like what could have been a really great opportunity for Lana Del Rey to either like cut her album short and just say like, these are the songs, these are the great songs, and now I'm going to drop the mic, or to, you know, finesse or workshop something out a little bit more to make that rest of the record really shine. Because I did not this has been a weird month. I did not expect to come out like a Meek Mill fan, and not a Meek Mill fan necessarily, but like, you know, coming around to Meek Mill and a lot of other random reviews here that have ended in ways I wouldn't have expected coming into the podcast. But I really think Lana Del Rey could have sold me a lot better if that latter half of the album had a little more like punch to it. And still staying in the tone. Yeah, still staying in the tone that it is, but it still needs something.
Yeah, I agree with that. Where, as I said earlier, if you cut a couple of those tracks towards the end, I think you would have had a really good album overall. But it gets along, especially towards those latter half, where it can be a little samey, it can be a little lackluster in that regard, where it's too slow. But that's something that you get with her music a lot. So, but overall, it's definitely a step in the right direction after Chemtrails, and being so close together as well, they are quite different records too. So I think it's decent effort.
Yeah. arbitrary scale this week because we do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because what we said in the review is what we said in the review.
One of my favorites.
This is a wild arbitrary scale for a wild episode. Sean, take it away.
This is Ronaldo gut kicks, my guy. If you watch the Manchester United versus Liverpool Premier League match of El Football, it is beautiful because he got so butthurt that they were getting their ass kicked at Old Trafford, and Mo Salah has more goals than him at his own fucking stadium this year than he does. He like misses a kick, or a goalkeeper saves a kick. He goes over to a defender, and the defender's on the ground on the ball, and he just starts kicking the shit out of him. Somehow doesn't get a red card. I don't know how you don't get a red card for literally just like trying to like break into a dude's stomach with your right foot, but you know.
It's when you're paying good money to the refs, allegedly.
Deadass.
But yeah, I we're giving this numbers of kicks, right?
Yeah. How many Ronaldo kicks is this?
What did you get?
And it, everything is subjective, so you can make 100 kicks, you can make 2 kicks, I don't give a shit. Do whatever you want. How many of our kicks, you could also add yellow cards, red cards to it, and like league suspensions and fines. Whatever you want, baby.
I'm going to give this, you know what, this is actually more enjoyable than I thought it would be. This is like in, if you've ever been bullied or the bully, where you're like about to kick someone and you raise your leg up really quickly just so the victim or you flinch, but like you don't actually go for it and you do like a light tap. That's what this album felt like. That's like Ronaldo doing like, you know, a little bit of head tickling with his foot. Just like a little like a, hey, this is a brush. This is a warning.
Yep. Yeah, I can get that. For mine, it'll be... He misses the ball and gets 2 gut punches to like the pelvis area.
Oh God.
And then like later on, like they do video review of it and something, and he gets like a $3 million fine or something wild like that.
Yeah. Moving on.
Moving on.
apparently,
this is a damn story.
Apparently Spotify, Amazon, and Pandora have been paying artists too much.
Apparently. Fucking apparently.
Billboard's reporting that on October 21st, several major streamers filed to the U.S. Copyright Board proposing royalty rates for 2023 to 2027. These royalty rates happen during like cycles. So basically every couple of years, they get to renegotiate these rates. These upcoming 4 years are known as CRB Phono Records 4, denoting the fourth period of late determination. It follows Phono Records 1 from 2008 to 2012, and that's happened continuously since then. Phono Records 3, that deal, represented an increase over the previous 2 periods, escalating over time, reading from Consequence of Sound, escalating over time and culminating in a royalty rate of 15.1% of the service's revenue in the final year. The specifics are much more complicated, as the article notes, but that's like the headline rate, essentially. So, yeah, back then they got it to be 15.1%. So that is the amount that streaming companies kicked back to songwriters, from what my understanding is. Okay. For the upcoming Phono Records 4 term, the National Music Publishers Association had sought an increase in the headline rate to 20%. So increasing it from 15.1 to 20%, that'd be a modest increase, and that would tack with the general increase that streaming has had since 2018. So people could work and negotiate that number out, but that's a negotiating number. Amazon, Spotify, and Pandora have responded to that negotiation by lowering the rate to before what it was like in 2018 to 10.5%. Nuts. Because Amazon really running out of money. They're just struggling.
Of course, they're struggling. Their cloud service doesn't do anything, man. Like it just there. It just exists. It doesn't pump up any money.
Yeah, it doesn't power any parts of the internet. AWS, there's no point to that. Apple Music, on the other hand, is following the leads of the judge from the Phono Records 3 appeal and wants to use a simplified version of whatever rate formulas decides. They're kind of doing like a hands-off approach here, which is interesting. Previously, there has been some You know, there's always been some talk about Apple being more artist friendly in these cases. I'm not necessarily sure here, but this is an interesting just sort of like a, hey, we don't want blood on our hands here necessarily.
Yeah.
But the Digital Media Association defended the lower rates, pointing out that streamers were, quote, seeing billions of dollars invested into catalogs and arguing that an expanding listening base would lead to more revenue that would eventually trickle down. You know that red flag meme?
I kind of get it now-ish.
I mean, it's very simple related to life. Basically, you're just posting things that, like, someone says these words or, like, mentions, like, this idea to you. And like, you're immediately like, oh, red flag, bad idea. And the trickle-down thing trickle-down was editorialized by Ren Graves in the article, to be clear. That's not something that the was officially said. Okay. But, like, that's essentially the, like, summarization of it, like, if that's how it goes, where, oh, you're getting money from catalogs, and music industry is changing to where artist catalogs are selling for a lot of money. So, you know, that money will eventually filter down to the rest of you. That's a red flag. That's a problem.
It don't work like that. Doesn't do it.
We're here in the first place because, like, record labels said, oh, no, we'll make a lot of money, and then it will trickle down to you. Like,
yeah,
trickle down is the corporate, like, C-suite version of, let me hold a dollar, I got you back next week. Like, we're holding the bag and you are never going to hold it. Like, that is kind of the game there. So we will watch it. We'll see how this goes.
Yep. Right. Second album review. That's an EP. To Hell With It by Pink Pantheress. It's 10 songs, 18 minutes long. So drop category, I guess you'd say, drop EP category ish around there.
Yeah. Pink Pantheress is blown up in this sort of, you know, bedroom pop indie space that is just flourishing right now. Flourishing in general, flourishing well with the women who are taking a part in it. And so that is also really good. But yeah, you kind of jump into this and you get just a lot of range here. And that's something I really appreciate.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting and kind of eclectic sounds you get from the record, and it's pretty cool. A lot of the tracks all the tracks pretty much are very short and kind of like just throw at you a lot of sound and stuff. So be prepared when you listen to it. It's a lot, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's
you have a lot of like bedroom. Bedroom.
It's
pop
really bedroom pop. Is just bedroom pop songs just really short. I'm just noticing.
Depending on the artist. It's more in trend this year to make short bedroom pop songs. Bedroom pop artists tend to randomly make like the same shit. So, but anyways, I really like the sound of this a lot. Pain starts off where that is like the most bedroom poppy song you can hear. It's like mixing B2B with Japanese House in like 2016 or something. So, not to say it's a bad thing, but that's what it sounds like.
I must apologize. The song right after that is a little reminiscent to me of 97 Blossom, which we reviewed a little bit earlier, which has a very...
Yeah, I was trying to think of who we did that. Yeah, 97 Blossom. Yeah,
it's a very inspired by the more faster-paced kinds of EDM, like drum and bass. Yeah, it's really solid, but like miraculously stays in this bedroom pop kind of aesthetic. Like it's something that would, even though it's very high tempo and high paced, and maybe for some bedroom pop people it's like too much. I think it's still really good and fits with the entire aesthetic of the album.
To drum and bass. If you get to the middle of "I Must Apologize," that is every single drum and bass song for the past 20 years.
I mean, yes, but that's also not to say that, like, drum and bass is a repetitive genre. I think it's like good.
I actually like drum and bass. I
will defend drum and bass, goddammit. No slander on this podcast.
I like drum and bass.
But yeah, moving on. You just have like a lot of songs that are just like blown up on here and done really well because like Pink Panthers has really nailed like a sound and a moment and of this like time. It's really good.
Exactly. You have Passion, which is a pretty cool track because it doesn't the words on the side of drum and bass. It was not what I thought. Keeps it in that bedroom pop setting again. Like, I must apologize. So it's something that there's only a couple artists I've heard do it, but I really like the way she does it because I love her voice in it. It makes it kind of soft feel and puts like a little innocence into it.
Yeah,
but still makes it, but the production is still fantastic. So
it's a little spoken word too. Yeah. It almost feels like that, but there's softness to it as well that makes it ride that line between spoken word and singing. Definitely lovely. Great observation.
Yes. Later on, Just For Me, Notice I Cried. If you have more, like, the whole little record is just those short tracks, but a lot of drum and bass inspiration through it. Still good. It's still pretty good. I like the... like, the thing with I think the whole EP is I really like the different genres she goes into. She does obviously bass, she does a little bit of different glitchy EDM sounds that you'll hear kind of in different rave settings or different little underground stuff that you won't necessarily
inspired
get.
It's not like ravey, but it's definitely inspired.
I was gonna say, yeah, exactly, inspired. It's like little hints that you'll get when you go and stuff, but overall I really like it. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think a really nice twist at the end. Now that I'm 19, and I wish that I could tell all my ex jobs in retail. But I should have stayed at work because of the A levels I failed. My cousin just told me that my favorite shop shut down. And the other one just told me that I've always got a frown. Because that sounds a lot more, instead of being ravey, it sounds a lot more like it's done in like one of my favorite live settings, which is like a jazz club where you have like a live band. They're sort of playing in a muted, quiet way, but still very like, loud and with a volume. You've got some prominent bass that just comes in like the right moments here and there just to kind of color what's going on. But it's really just like a rhythmic kind of song. As you get... Pink Panther's really lovely voice kind of echoing throughout here, delivering all the vocals. I think it's really produced really well, nice and tightly, and it does what we love drops do. Get in, get out, only the good shit, none of the filler.
Exactly. And it gets you an idea of like, this is a sound that she really wanted to make and just put it out there for it. There's no filler, nothing. Everything is there for a reason. So it's very good. Really, really good drop. Like it a lot. Right.
Yeah.
Arbitrary Scale this week is Ronaldo Gut Kicks, because we do Arbitrary Scales every week, every album, because normal rating scales are bullshit. Look at Pitchfork, for example. How's Random Access Memories bumped down and out of 10? So, you know, seppuku.
This week, I'm going to give this... You know, I know I did a different logic with the last album because, like, Lana Del Rey wasn't that bad. It was only, like, a pretty slight gut punch. This is good. That being said, I'm going to give it more gut punches. That's really inconsistent. Okay. So are numerical rating scales, and so are number rating scales. Exactly. So if anything, this is more like Pitchfork. So I'm going to give this 8 gut punches, and then like one in the back with the one with a heel to the back.
Ooh, okay. I'm giving this a slew foot and a red card for said slew foot. Like, you're going on, you like. The guy gets up after you do give him like a gut punch or so, and then when he runs, then you just slew foot him, so you might break an ankle or tear a ligament or some shit, and then you get red card. You're off without the dog. Goodbye.
These gut kicks are amazing. I just love this.
This is one of my favorite arbitrary skills.
And we move on. Randomly Adult Swim has just been like kind of great for alternative random music. And so here's a couple of those things there. They're not paying for this. Honestly, they should be. But we just thought, as fans of music, y'all would like to know these things. So there's a free virtual festival that Adult Swim is hosting on YouTube live for free coming up November 12th and November 13th. It's going to feature a pretty star-studded lineup. So like, it's usually, as with these Adult Swim things, music heavy, but also heavy into the art and the... stuff that is on Adult Swim. Mm-hmm. So very, very much Rick and Morty things. They're going to be pimping the shit out of Rick and Morty. You also see Robot Chicken, some Blade Runner, some Aqua Teen Hunger Force, some Squidbillies. But once you get to the music side of things, you get pretty solid lineup. Lil Baby, Karol G, 21 Savage, Flying Lotus, Alicia Cara, and Angel Olsen.
Yep. So it's interesting because Adult Swim has done a lot of stuff with music. I mean, there's a lot of stuff with MF Doom. I mean, the infamous Doom Christmas, never forget. And a lot of different albums and stuff that they've released throughout the years and years of doing that. So I always like it when they do stuff. This is a pretty interesting lineup and how they're doing it too.
Yeah, they'll also have like some live streaming of some episodes, and there are a ton more artists to be announced that will also be on there as well. Yes. So it's less of an ad for Adult Swim. It's more just like, this is a lot of really cool artists, and it's a really good curated lineup, and Adult Swim just happens to be good at these things. So check that out. And also, speaking of cool things curated by Adult Swim, just like you were talking about with the, like, you know, previous projects, there's the Adult Swim Singles Project, which definitely comes to mind, that a lot of Mad Villain even projects have come out song. Shout out Paper Mill.
Yeah.
There's a new one called Digitalis, which has it's an electronic music compilation. It's a 15-track LP featuring mixes from El Rain, Nydia, Juliana Barwick, Mary Lattimore, and several others. I'm definitely going to check that out because I've been fiending for some good electronic music this year, but that's kind of just like the story of Audio Face, where and I haven't said this very often recently, so I'll say it again. Because electronic music tends to be more mix heavy, and mixes and streaming services still don't, no pun intended, mix very well.
Yeah.
Because of aforementioned legal issues and streaming royalty nonsense, etc.
Yes.
A lot of times it's harder to find these mixes unless you're going to a live show or on SoundCloud.com. And so you will generally not get, you know, proper albums or things like that. And when you do get albums, they tend to be kind of just like repetitive nonsense, even for a genre that tends to be kind of repetitive. So I'll definitely check that out. I encourage folks to check that out because Adult Swim just built
credibility.
Yeah, they've built credibility in this space, so I'll allow them to spend it here.
Fair play. Right, next album review, we got LP by JPEG Mafia. It is 49 minutes and 2 seconds long, to be exact. JPEG Mafia is an artist we've done a bunch on Audio Face. I really like him. I like his music a lot. How many have we done on Audio Face now of his stuff?
I think we've done like some singles here, maybe an EP there. I think we may have even done like EP exclamation mark. But I know because I know there's that one JPEG Mafia and Chai combination on the Gorillaz record that came out last year, Song Machine. That was very strange because it was repeatedly called the happiest thing JPEG Mafia's ever appeared on. Super Carilla.
It's so weird.
Anyways, LP is LP is an opportunity for JPEG Mafia to really kind of get back on it. All My Heroes Are Cornballs from 2019, I'd say, is his last like proper length project type thing. And then, of course, like Veteran kind of took him to legend status with songs like Curb Stomp, 1539, North Calvert, etc. But LP is wildly avant-garde and experimental in a way that I haven't really seen from a rap record since Vince Staples' Big Fish Theory. I don't like it as much as I like Vince Staples' Big Fish Theory, but it does some
not as cohesive.
Yeah, definitely not as cohesive. I don't think it's trying to be in any kind of way, but there's a whole lot of experimentating, and I'm saying that purposely, there's a whole lot of experimentating happening on this album here, and a lot of it's industrial and electronic, and it's stuff I've really, really wanted to hear from rap music for a while, so quite happy about it, at least in the beginning.
Yeah, and the first like half of the album, you get a lot. Like, example, Trust, the opening track is a lot of sounds. a lot of sounds. I can't believe that shit. I don't believe that bitch. I don't believe these niggas, bro. They be these on shit. I won't even try to. I won't even lie. I'm looking good. I won't even fib. I'm feeling nice. These hoes just cannot. Whoa. I won't even try to. Whoa. I won't even lie. Hey. I'm looking good. I won't even fib. I'm feeling nice. It just like throws at you a bunch of shit, and it's all ironically because JPEG Mafia hates being compared to Death Grips, but it sounds really Death Gripsy, which was like my whole thing of the irony of that, but. That's the only way I can explain it in the way is the way he raps on top of the electronic beats, but they don't necessarily even have a beat. It's electronic sounds, especially for Trust, like the opening track. I like it though, because it's so different and out there, but it still works.
I mean, it's
because it almost
chaos.
Sounds like it's extreme rap chaos because the little like chime beat or whatnot sounds like a Phoenix demo I heard in like 2007 or something. So it's like some really obscure, weird shit that I listened to before, and I go, and you're rapping on top of this. I'm like, okay, that's why not?
Yeah, if you're into really avant-garde projects like the first, the earlier and the self-titled Injury Reserve project, for example, the more recent one, which we reviewed and liked very much, it's a totally different record and it's very, very, very far out there. This is like has a little bit more mainstream appeal, is what I'm saying. And I think the Injury Reserve project was kind of out there as well, but had a little bit more mainstream appeal for like an Injury Reserve record, the self-titled one. LP by JPEG Mafia, I think, has that appeal because there's raps here. It's kind of like it's more of a Denzel Curry experimental rap where you can like start to market this and put this in other places, as opposed to some of the really deep indie like Death Grips, your Injury Reserve, which is still great. We still like them, but like it's particularly non-marketable, if you know what I mean. Because comes from like the rapping, the fact that JPEG Mafia, no features on this, or other than, yeah, friend of the show, Denzel Curry at the very end, which I think is a good pairing on the Bald remix. But overall on this record, it's really just carried by the really kind of experimental beats, and then JPEG Mafia's very thoughtful kind of like, you know, like leaves you guessing lyricism.
Yeah, exactly. And like, the thing with this is like, the first, you know, five tracks are just really out there and crazy. You have more of a normal-ish track with Thoughts Prayer, which is a hilarious title, name for a track, by the way. I love it. But I really enjoy that track because it's combining like modern-day rap, trap, within a lot of interesting beats and sounds and stuff that you haven't really... you wouldn't necessarily mix in a track that you can hear with the rapping, like the rapping, the flow and the lyrics, everything, you could fit it into a normal trap beat. But obviously he doesn't do that. He puts it into a bunch of different packages of sounds in it, and then it works for what it is. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that these packages...
like a little auto-tune part and stuff towards the end, like the middle of the track, you still get it too.
Yeah. I like that, kind of like we were saying, he kind of fits himself into a number of different angles, if that makes any sense. So like song 9, you get OG, which is particularly like boom bap soundy, has that kind of almost Beastie Boys late 80s early 90s hip hop kind of sound to it in the background. But then two songs later you get Sick, Nervous and Broke, which kind of brings a lot more of the experimentation, the risking, going all these different directions all together, but still kind of like delivering rap lyrics with him.
What the fuck, I'm still here walking around if you a demon. See? Mm-mm. I don't believe it.
Not at all.
I'll shoot my shit, I'll never miss, but I hit my target.
Yeah, yeah.
And it go a little quick, I'm the wrong nigga to start with.
Yeah, yeah.
I know why you hate, cause you don't feel safe in your own apartment.
No.
I know why you hate, you know you lame, but know you ball.
Shake it up.
Yeah, I see the
fucking it's definitely like it's a great exercise, honestly, and putting all these things together that are very disparate and laid out apart, if that makes any sense.
Agreed. 100% agreed. Later down, like, towards like, the end, latter half of the album, I guess, like, you have, well, I say middle, you have like tracks like Rebound, damn with more exclamation points, because apparently, I guess allegedly, you put them in emails now and stuff, because that's what the hip folks do. I don't know. But I really like the way those tracks sound towards the middle and the latter half of the album, not necessarily like the very end, but those middle and tracks I really enjoyed because of just how different, again, they are and the way the flow is, the way the beats are. I like it a lot. But it's definitely so, comparing it to earlier to what you said about Big Fish Theory, Big Fish Theory is like an extremely cohesive record for what it is, but this is definitely not as cohesive as that, but it's more experimental than Big Fish Theory by far. But yeah. It's finally, we've been wanting something like this for a long time that is mainstream-ish and is more marketable and is easier for people to listen to other than the weird indie shit that we get to, but that we do enjoy a lot. You definitely finally get that record that we've been wanting for a while. I think it's very good.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, the bald remix by the Bald Remix goes fucking hard.
Yeah, that's
Dizzle Curry is a perfect fit.
Yeah. My life was written already, so I was gifted already. And with this God-given talent, I knew the devil been met me. Can't compare me to Jesus because he ain't know his father. He told me peace, peace still, and see that still is revolver. Cause in my hood, these niggas popping mollies and shooting. I'm stressed the fuck out. That's why I must commence to get zooted. I'm trapped in my head between the thoughts of health and my wealth. Right next to being selfish and just being myself.
I wish he was on a couple more tracks than he was on. I wish you could have done a couple more. I think it would have been really good for the way that, you know, Denzel Curry does his sound and whatnot and has marketed himself. And it could have been really cool. So
that's absolutely true. I didn't want to end this interview without shouting out the fact that Denzel Curry and JPEG Mafia, with this experimental sound that's electronic, with like what they're doing, they're really like keying in together in a really good way. And I'd love to see like a dual project with, let's get a little bit of JPEG Mafia, let's get a little bit of Denzel Curry, let's throw some Kenny Beats in there, just a little bit of seasoning on top. That would be great, especially because, real talk, Kenny Beats has that EDM to trap music like match over. Wow, I'm getting my like all-star team here with JPEG Mafia, Denzel Curry, Kenny Beats, maybe a Metro Boomin in there. That'd be,
dude, Jesus, damn! Yeah. Make it happen, damn it!
You heard it here first, Audio Face Podcast, the official A&R for the music industry in 2023. Anyways, proper good record. If you're a rap fan wanting to see like what is on the edge of rap music right now, you want to check out LP. It's I think it's got bangers on it. I think it's got songs like you can actually just like generally normally play it. If it fits that, go on.
Rebound and Bald, do it. Those are great tracks.
Yeah. It's got like, it's doing this sort of shorter song kind of thing throughout most of it, but I think you know, songs like Nemo, Thoughts Prayer, like you said, also very fun, nice as well. BMT is a banger, just to check that out as well. But yeah, you'll love this track, you'll love this album generally, I would say. So check it out. Arbitrary Scale this week, Ronaldo Gut Kicks. I'm gonna give this what was that button on the let me make this a little more modern. When you're running one of those speed hacks that lets you click the mouse down or click the mouse button down and you're just like shooting like it's an automatic, like you're just like constantly shooting, it's like that but Gut Kicks, just like
you're pumping blocks into his dead body.
It's like the Hitachi magic wand but Gut Kicks.
This is one powerful kick where he breaks the ball. You hit it so hard that the ball breaks and everybody just stands around like, well, what do we do now?
X-ray of the ball as though it has bones, just like breaking. The clap heard around the world.
Oh man, I fucking love that's one of my favorite Arbitrary Scales.
Great choice, man. Great choice.
Also, if you haven't seen the video, just look up Cristiano Ronaldo today or whenever this podcast gets released, because it'll be trending, I'm sure. And just watch. Have
yeah, the week around this podcast gets released, or these clips as well. I might have to throw in, and I'm just making more work for myself, but I'll throw in a screenshot of a kick just because, you know, it's fun. Right. We always like to end the news portion of Audio Face on a fun note, and you should have seen what other story I almost put here, but that could have been way too saucy.
Did you put it there? Did you put it at the end or?
Yeah, I put it at the end of No Chill Island instead.
Yeah, thank you, because that's the bleepiness.
But speaking of saucy, Megan Thee Stallion, hot girl herself, is getting her own hottie sauce at Popeyes.
Hey.
So, you know, it's going to be a blend of honey, cider vinegar, and Aleppo pepper. You can get this at Popeye's chicken, with their chicken sandwich or their nuggets. So I'm pretty sure, like, whatever you can get at Popeye's. Us being vegetarians and people who, like, generally don't eat chicken, just not going to be a great conversation for us. But this just follows another trend in music where you're having musicians in... especially in COVID where they can't monetize off of their concerts, monetizing off of fast food. Because Americans love them some fast food. They love them some McDonald's.
Some McDonald's and some fried chicken.
There's also a full... I love them reading the sentence. This is just a great palate cleanser fun Chef's note kiss. For Audioface. There's going to be a merch line.
No, mom is really. There is.
With a... Popeye's orange bikini with flames over the nipples. I'm gonna throw a picture. Like, look at the article, Sean. At the very bottom, I'm gonna throw the picture in of the podcast. It rocks.
I know. I see it. That's why I'm dying of laughter, because I was like, they did not put merch. I scroll down, like, they put merch. And the best, my favorite part though, is saucy advisory.
I'm unfortunately might buy this for someone.
You and me both. I have a couple people in mind. I might actually get this for Christmas. This might be a good Christmas gift for a few people.
You just turn these vegetarians into some damn Popeyes customers. Look at that. And that's marketing, damn it.
That's marketing, damn it, because we ain't buying meat. So, you know, it works.
All right. This has ended the regular portion of Audioface. And so that means we get to begin No Chill Island 20.
Yeah, oh my god. Oh, Jesus.
First of all, I'm just going to say, content warning. Strap in. I'm not even going to tell you what content I'm warning you for, because it's a potpourri. It's a charcuterie board of of all kinds of... This is... I try not to exaggerate too much. This is the wildest No Chill Island, I think, we've produced, if not ever, in at least 100 episodes.
Oh, yeah. This is one of the sauciest ones, especially the last story, because it's not going to be usable. What I'm going to say is not going to be usable. I'm already warning you. I'm sorry. There's going to be some editing done towards the end here, but, you know.
Yeah. Before we begin, because I know we're just like, we're about to drop penalties because we're reaching over the starting line here. No Chill Island is... much like Audioface, a game about morals. The first one to get bleeped loses, but the first one to get bleeped also sets off a torrent of
just debauchery and just clips being done and everybody.
A LimeWire, if you will. A BitTorrent. So many. Anyways, we're going to begin. Sean, you've been losing pretty badly here.
I know.
We begin with... I'm ready. We begin with a story. Thankfully, finally, NBA YoungBoy is in fact free. I'm happy to report to you that as of this week, NBA YoungBoy is free. He's released from jail following a weapons arrest that U.S. District Judge Shelley Dick reversed course of, and decided that YoungBoy NBA wouldn't have to sit trial relating his response. So he's going to have to be on trial on house arrest, essentially. Coming soon in Utah. And he has to post $1.5 million property bond or put $500,000 into a trust account before he can be released. And... this has been a long time coming because of NBA YoungBoy being freed. And so this has been really good, but...
psych!
Wrong. I don't like that call. Not a very good call. Turns out, much like the Fed said, it is YoungBoy never free again. Because not even on, like, literally on the same day.
10 minutes later, you just walk in jail and you're just like, you just get turned away. You just like go back. You forgot something. Just lock the key. Be like, you got one more week, dog.
NBA YoungBoy's bond was placed on hold because the same day a second gun case was opened in California. So NBA YoungBoy is going to be in police custody for at least another week as he's hearing more info from the gun case in California, because police found a gun in his Maybach truck earlier this year. So after dealing with the house arrest thing in Utah, he's going to have to sort through this as well.
Wow. Fucking poetry in motion.
Listen, he can't catch a break, though, because literally the feds, I made that joke, but like the feds literally were caught creating a sting operation called Operation YoungBoy Never Free Again.
Exactly. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Like, it's racism in motion. Like, it's wow.
It's beautiful. Damn, I didn't know we were still doing that in this country. Holy shit. Times change, values don't.
Right?
Times change, values don't. Speaking of values not changing.
Really fast, just to wrap up the story. Okay. It's looking that, yeah, NBA YoungBoy is going to be sitting in the clink for a little while longer as he sorts this out. But whatever. Let's move on to the Lil Nas X corner. So we've got two Lil Nas X stories. One of them involves Boosie Badass. And in the words of one of my friends, who's Boosie Badass? So Boosie Badass, all the old heads are going to be so upset right now. Terrence Ivy Hatch Jr., better known as Boosie Badass, was a member of the 1990s hip-hop collective Concentration Camp before eventually pursuing a solo career. He's a very, very old head kind of rapper. At one point, he was sentenced to 4 years in El Clink for prison and drug charges. Boosie Badass, Never Free Again. And he was released early on March 5th, 2014. That being said, Boosie Badass listens to Audioface because he in response to, well, let me go back. Lil Nas X, it's a known fact that Boosie Badass is really homophobic. This is just a general thing. Part of like what Lil Nas X has been fighting in rap music for that's been a long time coming has been rampant homophobia in rap because of folks like Boosie Badass. And Lil Nas X made a joke on Twitter saying, Boosie Badass collaboration on the way, essentially. But Boosie was not a fan of the joke and said, and I can barely quote, "Stop trolling me, F-word slur. You a wild bitch playing with a gangsta, SMH. You can keep sucking sick," it was spelled that way, "and getting fucked in your ass in peace in hashtag you hate yourself. I would too if I was you, Nas X. If you would do this word a huge favor, nobody wants you here." Spelling errors aside,
that's my favorite thing. It is unintelligible of what he was saying.
Talk about net banging at its finest, am I right?
Oh my what God.
Boosie Badass is just like one of the most washed out people. Literally no one knows who he is. He has to get clout by being homophobic. And never mind that, because you know there's a bunch of different things. Lil Nas X has been on this like, not to discredit, but Lil Nas X has been on this like, I am gay and I am proud stand for a moment now. This is just like a new rule about the music industry. Lil Nas X is a troll. He's coming for everyone and he doesn't care. You either play along with it or you get rolled. Like, there's no other two options.
Exactly.
You can be like Vince Staples and play along with it without having anyone question your sexuality. Or you
dog, it's 8 a.m.
Or you end up like Boosie Badass and you get rolled. Lil Nas X responded with a tweet by saying, "I'm truly saddened. I've never been so mortified in my life. I can't believe Disney Channel has yet to play Halloween Town this entire October." He don't give a fuck, man. Like,
you ran.
Lil Nas X has received every form of criticism, and it doesn't matter anymore. Like, he's just numb to it. And like, it's not great.
It doesn't matter.
it's not great that like P will continue to receive like criticism not on the basis of his musical talent, which I believe there's a lot of critique to be had, but no, just purely on the fact that he is very outwardly gay with his sexuality, the same way a lot of women musicians and music are very outwardly sexual, same way a lot of male musicians have been outwardly sexual in music for decades and decades and decades. So again, you can't make Lil Nas X mad. Boosie Badass is caught big mad and with his pants down. And so I think that's really funny. Furthermore,
I don't want to lose.
You don't want to lose this early, basically.
Exactly.
If you're going to lose, you're going to lose right, because there's a lot coming here. We're going to round out the Lil Nas X corner just by noting that TikTok was planning to release a Lil Nas X NFT, but they decided to shelve that, which is a great idea.
TikTok, thank you for doing a favor. And don't.
Yeah. Rolling Stone. Sources close to TikTok told Rolling Stone the program's rollout was ranging from, quote, a challenge to, quote, a complete joke. It was unclear exactly how the Lil Nas X NFT was going to take place, but we've talked about NFTs, non-fungible tokens, being this thing that crypto adjacent people are using, essentially, you know, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin type people are using to artificially generate money based on very little bit of a premise. Basically, yeah. You're buying a digital token that earns you the rights to some type of item, but some type of digital item, but ultimately, like, who the value, I mean, to me, my like political economic hat in the ring, the value of that item doesn't really matter. It's within the, if people decide that item has value, and if people decide holding the original copy of that item has value, because this is the internet and we can screenshot and screen record things, so it's not like there's any scarcity into the mix. But anyways, there's going to be around $4 million in, sorry, I'm reading from the wrong thing here. That has nothing to do with the story. But other artists who had done TikTok's NFT initiative with Grimes, I was going to say, who got $6 million from the sales of her own NFTs. So there's a lot of money to be made here. But I think TikTok runs into the issue of the fact that cryptocurrency, NFTs, all these things are being increasingly regulated by not just the U.S. government, but by China, where TikTok, their parent company, ByteDance, I believe, is based. And so by including, you know, cryptocurrency and buying and putting it into your app that is made for teenagers and people who are too young to use financial instruments generally, seems like it could be a mess waiting to happen. So TikTok pulled back on that. Wise to do it. Screw with the environment. Moving on, Lil Xan, who looks great in all of his photos.
How long is he? Never mind.
Hold the line. Recently on Instagram stories, he was flashing some watches, as you know, clout rappers are wont to do, and he put a little fake tag on it with Richard Mille, and then put $700K on it. That being said, there was an account called Fake Watch Buster on Instagram, because that's all Instagram is. It's just clout and the clout adjacent economy. Screw nice photos and even food photos anymore. It's just the clout economy. That's all Instagram is. Yeah. Fake Watch Buster, the account on there, said, "In our opinion, you're wearing two fake Richard Mille watches. The Rafa Nadal watch looks fake as well. A genuine carbon NTP worth approximately $560,000 and a genuine RM035-01 watch is worth more than $500,000 US. So listen, I'm not a $500,000 watch connoisseur. I'm not generally thinking about $500,000 things or items to possess, because I'm a Zoomer and that's probably never going to happen in my life. That all being said, these watch experts seem to be calling cap on Lil Xan, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it definitely looks fake. And it's hilarious.
I mean, everything about Lil Xan is fake. I mean, like,
exactly.
his watches aren't designer. They look fake. The only thing designer about Lil Xan might be the drugs he's using.
I don't even know if those are designer because he's so zooted out of his mind. He's just like a walking bag. Like he's just at this point, he needs to be walking with a little the hospital gown and just a fucking IV bag of just dripping just to keep him alive now because of how many bad drugs he's gotten in his life. Just look at his face, dude. He's just like, whoa.
Lil Xan's about to be wheeling around oxygen at age 30. Like this is gonna be a problem if he doesn't stop.
Keep it up, dude. Keep it up. Why not?
And moving on. An immediate nomination for the Dusk to Dawn Mugshot Award. Toronto rapper Top 5 was arrested in LA facing charges for first degree murder.
So, okay, I didn't want to look at this screenshot before because all I saw was just the head cut off, by the way. So I've had this tabbed open for about an hour and some change because I knew it was going to be a mugshot award, and this is one of my favorite Dusk to Dawn Award nominees ever. He just looks like he's gonna like murder the fucking camera operator, man. Like he's staring deep into penetrating your soul with those eyes. Like he has like shadow coming over his eyes, so you know that's like demon blood energy right there. He might eat his neighbor or something, you know.
Yeah, he was arrested in connection with a January 2021 murder where Hashim Omar Hashi was trying to enter a parking garage in Toronto but was shot multiple times. He was initially caught in Toronto by Toronto police in March and charged with accessory after the fact to murder and two counts of failing to comply with probation. He was released on the house arrest. That apparently didn't work out well. He removed his ankle monitor, fled the scene, and ended up in LA where we have this fine addition to our mugshot awards that we will be doing later this year. This is going to be we're going to have to talk about the logistics of the award show because we're going to need IATSE union breaks. We're going to need we're going to need to make sure we have breaks just to make sure like Riley doesn't accidentally like give me a loaded gun to kill you with. This is going to be a long ass award show.
I'm just going to stay over and just have like several drinks on hand because this is ridiculous. It's going to be an 18 hour podcast.
The Dusk to Dawn Award is going to be 30 minutes alone. It's going to be a lot of analysis.
We're
going to
be judging picture by picture and like, which camera did they use? What style?
We'll break out the whiteboard. We're going to need to do brackets.
Please, I want this so bad. Yes,
Audio Face Awards. Audio Face Awards. Even a mugshot.
Oh, Christ. Oh, what the fuck is Tory Lanez opening up his fat mouth for? All right, so he's blasting modern music apparently for being repetitive and redundant. I'll say the quote and we'll go full guessing. It's crazy. Music hasn't actually been sticking lately. Like all of our favorite artists, music is not lasting with us longer than 4 to 5 months. Real music must come back into play, real emotion, less repetitive and redundant.
Okay. First of all, why did Tory Lanez open his like gibbon lip up to fix his face to say any shit like this? Because for Tory Lanez, the avatar.
Chin hair too, goddamn.
For Tory Lanez, the avatar of bland, tasteless R&B music, very likely shot Megan Thee Stallion in the foot.
And also, aren't you supposed to be in jail or some shit too? Like, who are you talking to? Are they coming over to your house arrest?
Yeah. Like, case is pending. Tory Lanez here has nothing to say about groundbreaking music whatsoever. Has no point to stand on with groundbreaking music. But he's saying, you know, modern music is repetitive and redundant. Again, Tory Lanez is trash. He's a crank. But what we say always when artists come out with this and tell on themselves, you're not listening to any music. You are not very ingratiated in the music industry. You are in a bubble because an audio phase where we have our own bubbles, sure, but we are listening to a wide range of music every single week. And sometimes albums take a little while longer to stick on us throughout the year. Sometimes albums that we really like in the beginning don't hold on and last. But things have come out this year that are not repetitive, that are not redundant, that are going to be classics years from now. And we're just like kind of listening to it and enjoying it in the moment. And we're going to be like, wow, 2021, what a time to be alive when X, Y, and Z song was just out and brand new. And we didn't know what a classic was that was going to be. We didn't know what meme that was going to be. I feel a lot of that from like Baby Keem, for example, right? But I have no idea. You know, I mean, I do know. Tory Lanez is not listening to any fucking music at all. He's too busy eating to actually focus on music that is actually coming out right now. I mean, at least being in the zoo is getting him ready to be useful for what's very likely coming to him in the Meg Thee Stallion case.
I finally didn't lose. Oh, man.
That was necessary. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's good because I hope that
Why don't you save it for the next story? Because if I wasn't going to lose it for this
story, I'm about to call Drake. So I already got leaped right there. So look at this Momo ass face right here. Look at Drake Green, half a Momo on screen.
Whoa.
Peter, for Christ, everybody, fine tooth comb, Jesus Christ, for this segment alone and then the last segment. Let me read it before I get bleeped some more. Drake threatened to quit Degrassi because his character used a wheelchair. Apparently.
Spoilers for Degrassi, a show that came out 10 years ago.
What, like 15 years ago at this point? Or 20 years ago?
A show that's so old, it was only filmed in like a 480i.
Really? Yeah, it really was. Oh, Lord. So basically, like, there's a big ass quote to it, but.
He didn't want to
be in a wheelchair because he didn't want to seem soft in the rap game.
Yeah, he was apparently, well, he sent this through in typical Drake fashion. Drake had his manager, whatever, send a message to one of the Degrassi people in response to a point in Degrassi where Drake's character is paralyzed from the waist down after surviving a school shooting. I mean, I don't even want to call that foreshadowing because it happens every week in America now at this point. But basically, there was a law firm in Toronto stating that Drake wouldn't return to season 6 of Degrassi unless Jimmy's injuries were healed. So maybe there's an episode where Drake's character goes to one of those preachers with a jet and just like heals them and like raises them out of a wheelchair. Like, I show thee, you are healed and you are now a fuckboy. Like I don't know, like what the hell is going on? What does he expect? I love how he sent his legal team out for writing notes. For writing notes.
This is the biggest not a little bitch like nomination I want to give out ever. It also, that's got to be brackets. Like, we got to have like fights for the not a little bitch award this year because there's a lot. You got Jermaine Cole quitting basketball but saying it was an injury, but you just sucked so fucking bad at layups that you didn't even get it, even though you're like 8 foot tall and you got dreads, so you should probably be good at basketball. Might need to bleep that too. But Drake has to send his legal team because he's like, oh, I'm way too soft. Like, I can't. Like, my friends might judge me in the rap game because, you know, I can't do this. But instead of him going up with fucking balls and Weibos in his hand, he ain't doing that. He's sending out his team to do it. God, you have like, you are the scrawniest little dude on the planet. It's hilarious. In my feelings.
Real talk, like, just to be serious here, there's nothing about being in a wheelchair that makes you like soft per se, right? Like,
no, there's, you could be hard on a wheelchair, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, never mind in cartoons where you have that one like Family Guy character who's like buff as shit and also like in a wheelchair. But like, stereotypes aside, like, there's too much to be said like in society where it's talked about where people with disabilities or people who like are differently able or don't have like all of their like quote unquote normal like physical mobilities about them are still able to live honestly healthier lives than a lot of people who do have all of those physical abilities about them. It could have been a great moment for Drake to be like, I mean, it was a moment in Degrassi that was written to particularly have a hit, right? So, I mean, like, hit emotionally in the sense of like, it's a shooting, it's a major character in it. Their recovery could have been something that folks with disabilities look up to, people who are shooting survivors. Like, well, let's take it to a different context. You know how many, like, because Drake's never been in the hood, he doesn't know this, but like, I know OGs who have been shot, who are in a wheelchair all their life. These are hard ass motherfuckers. And it's not that they're any less like tough or whatever machismo and like need to strive that aside, not any less tough because they're like in a wheelchair because they're paralyzed because they were shot. All right.
Exactly.
Like, and again, like this, I got to deconstruct this conversation so many ways because like being injured is not like how tough you are. All right. But this whole thing where like Drake made it a big deal and brought in the Lars over literally writing notes. I was about to like give this away. It's like, oh, you know, Drake had his manager, someone was writer, but no, his legal team for writing notes. Noted little bitch. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Come on, Drake.
So DMX has a really shitty pullout game, apparently. So
pullout game horrendous.
So DMX is alleged 15th child. Comes forward seeking money from late rapper's estate. Man. This is rough.
What a mess.
So obviously DMX passed away earlier this year following a cocaine induced heart attack. Bam. What a way to go. What a way to go doing blow.
Yeah. And like we talked about this when DMX passed, and around that time there was some posthumous songs released around that where DMX's whole musical career was about a lot of pain and suffering and overcoming and sometimes not overcoming, you know, fighting the battle of drug addiction and relapsing and things like that. But yeah, apparently, according to Page Six, there's an alleged 15th child that is coming forward and wanting a piece of DMX's estate. A DNA test still has to be completed to determine paternity, but like there's 15.
That's like the ultimate. What shitty TV shows where you're not the father? I cannot think of the title of it.
Maury,
here we go. It's a beautiful episode of that. I want that to be an episode, right? Of just waiting to get the blood test results and everything back. And you're like, you are DMX's son. And then you get into the estate. You get to roll in and take all the shit.
I was watching one of those YouTube React videos recently with one of my friends all YouTube is YouTube React. In a cosmic way, everything we post on YouTube is a React video. But like, God damn it, I lost my train of thought because that was really deep. But I was watching a React video on YouTube, and it was one of those TLC shows about a sperm donor, essentially.
Oh,
where.
No.
A sperm donor dad like gets to meet all of the kids he artificially inseminated.
Holy,
and so it's this like family
shit.
Reunion of like these 16 corn-fed Ohioans meeting at like a Holiday Inn Express somewhere and like over some continental breakfast hugging this like random dude who plays way too much Call of Duty, probably. It's like tossing kids like left and right over here and getting paid handsomely for it. Honestly, we're all losing. DMX kind of did that, but with rap and cocaine. So, hey, what can I say?
And we always like to end Audio Face on a fun note. So,
what's more fun than R. Kelly potentially killing himself?
I don't know. All I know is that we would pay great money to just watch that.
Oh, pay per view.
Like, I want live stream. I want to go in person. Why can't we just charter? I'll fly us. Let's have the whole PowerPoint team come. You know, let's go. I'll fly all us there. We're good.
We can do this like Joe Rogan, unofficial. This is a fight companion.
The death companion?
Yes.
This is the whole new meaning to Audio Face before the bodies are cold. Jesus Christ.
This is a suicide injection companion.
The story is R. Kelly was placed on suicide watch following his guilty verdict because, you know, he's like, I did it. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
All of the above that are things that make me happy. We're going to have to fine tooth comb the entire thing.
R. Kelly's placed on suicide watch following guilty verdict. This has been the podcast.
We're going to lather up in this. Okay. R. Kelly was found guilty on R. Kelly was on suicide watch after being found guilty of one count of racketeering rooted in alleged sexual exploitation of children, kidnapping and forced labor, and 8 counts of violating the Mann Act, a law that criminalizes transporting someone across state lines with the intent that such individual engage in prostitution or any sexual activity for which any person can be charged with a criminal offense. His sentencing...
It's not a good dude.
Not a great guy. And these are just the federal sentencing. There's state sentencing. There's all the stuff from the P tapes to the women who were allegedly being held like in in a compound, and to the whole culture around R. Kelly that was like, yeah, boss, this is all good. Continue doing what you're doing. This is all great. And people who are consuming the music, the fact that's all coming down and R. Kelly is like facing reality with the fact that he is a terrible person and might be better off in like in a position where he is not around people he can potentially harm, and also knowing what's likely coming to him in El Clink once he gets to commissary. Listen, you look at your options on the table, and sometimes you look at that table and the table's gone and all that's there is a stool, a ceiling fan, and some rope. And this has been Audio Face. You can find Audio Face on Twitter and Instagram. And actually, this is one of those ones where you probably shouldn't follow us afterwards. So Sean exists. I exist. I'm somewhat easy to find and somewhat not easy to find, but we can be found on the internet. And this has been Audio Face.
I only do it if I trust you. And
We will exist next week on what will likely be a squeaky clean episode. I don't think we can afford to do 2 Neutral Islands back to back. Cheers.
Bye.